Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 4th. I'm Ray Graff. It's a beautiful day. This would be a great day to get out there and look at some birds. And you know what? If you want to do that, wait an hour, because today we'll talk about birds. Rich Guthrie is here to share his knowledge with you and answer your questions. I say here, he's not actually here at this present time, but he's due to arrive. And if he doesn't, this is going to be one heck of a show. Give us a call either way, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If Guthrie doesn't show up, we'll figure something out. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Theoretically, birds, coming up after the news. Well, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today. And just barely, we're going to welcome Rich Guthrie, who made it in a moment ago, and my heart started beating again. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC and is now the regional reviewer for their premier birding site, eBird. Julie Hart is out of town today or doing something and can't be on the show. So when Rich had some, you know, he couldn't find a place to park. And he just walked in. So I was thinking, what do I know about birds? And I discovered not much. But Rich is here. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have your question, you can email voxpop@wamc.org. And we have a few of those already. Oh, just in the nick of time. Rich Guthrie, how you doing?
All right, right. So, nice, surprisingly nice to be here.
Why? You're usually not happy to be here.
No. That I'm here at all.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you're here. I thought that perhaps something had gone awry, because I know we confirmed yesterday.
Yes.
But the parking can be problematic.
I found that out.
Yes, and thank you so much for coming in. And we have lots to talk about today, surprisingly. It's about birds. This email, do you have anything you would like to say?
I'm ready.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
You want a couple minutes just to take a breather and relax?
You need to catch my breath and slow down my heart
and relax a little?
No.
Breathe in, breathe out. All right, this one comes from Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania. This is from our friend Mariana. I have several hummingbird feeders out. I have 14 ruby-throated hummies this year. I noticed what I believe are the babies going to different flowers, such as daylilies, that they are unable to get nectar from. I am refilling the feeders several times a day. Does constant feeding from feeders delay their learning how to forage for flowers, or is it just part of the process? And that's from Mariana in Pennsylvania.
A wonderful question. And first of all, let me just say that how many hummingbirds at once? My gosh.
14 ruby-throated.
14 I've heard of that happening before. With a fellow up in the hill towns of Albany County, where he had multiple hummingbirds coming to his feeder, which to me is very unusual. It's not their pattern. They tend to be very singular, dominant, protectionist, and not very sociable with one another.
Huh.
So to have more than one, maybe two.
Well, you know, maybe the 14 that Mariana was talking about were not all at once.
Okay, I'll take it either way, because this guy's was all at once. He had a bunch of them coming in. And it's more like the habit of one of our Western hummingbird species, where they will tolerate half a dozen, 10, 12, many. After a while, it gets hard to count. But in any event, it's all part of the process.
Okay.
They'll catch on. They'll watch and learn. The babies will be fine, right? Yes.
Okay, they'll be okay. Ken in Greenwich, New York says, last week, as we were picking blueberries in our patch, a scarlet tanager flew into our bushes. It was followed by another bird of the same size with red-brown speckles on it. When I looked at my bird book, it wasn't the female. Was it an immature tanager? The adult kept its distance, but the other bird was bold enough to be about a yard from us. I've never seen one in the Eastern Greenwich area before. How can we attract more? And that's from Ken in Greenwich.
Well, it seems to me it's like grow more blueberries.
Really? They love the berries, do they?
They're a berry eater. They're a fruit eater. And the blueberries will do it. Other native plants will also do it. They are typically a treetop or canopy bird species. Now, this what can you say, this lumberjack pattern, scarlatanager, the red and black patches. That's an adult male that's going from its nuptial plumage or its spring breeding plumage into its fall autumn plumage. And
kidding me.
They do that.
So they get dressed up?
They get dressed down.
They get dressed up when they're looking for a little hey-hey.
Whatever. And in any event, when that's all over, score two, then he's gone. He doesn't need the spiffy stuff.
So he's on the couch slouching around watching the game is
what
you're
saying.
Yeah,
right, more or less, or just ready to hang out, go down to the ballpark.
Having a sandwich and whatnot.
Yeah, all so right. They change their colors. They no longer need to be the Mr. Look at Me. They sort of don't pay attention to me. I'm nothing here.
That is so interesting. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds, 800-348-2551. All right, this is from Ed. Favorite birds / permanent souvenir. Here's a question for the esteemed Mr. Guthrie.
Uh-oh.
Now, he didn't show up, but Rich did show up here. On this past Sunday's CBS 60 Minutes, there was a segment about a rare bird sanctuary in the mountains of Colombia. The fellow who managed it sported tattoos of his favorite birds all over his body. Mm. Is that something a devoted birder like Rich would consider doing? Yeah. If so, what birds would Rich have engraved?
None of the above.
You sure?
Positively.
All right. I mean, any bird maybe could make it onto the tat zone?
Not unless I shaved my head, got one on my scalp, and then grew my hair back, let's say.
Okay.
Anyway,
all right.
And then put a hat on top of it, these just to be sure.
All very disturbing thoughts. Let's go to Mary Beth's email. Need help identifying a bird. I saw an injured bird at Otsego Lake's Glimmerglass State Park on Saturday. It was on the ground, not able to fly. I notified park staff, got a good look at it, but I can't identify it from books or online. It was the size of a catbird, brown and white mottled coloration, brown and white striping under the wings, no hooked beak, and rounded fan-shaped tail with a distinctive 3/4-inch red-orange band of color across the entire tail. Immature raptor? Any clues? That's from Mary Beth.
Well, was there an indication of size involved there?
Perhaps. Did you listen when I read?
I got caught up in the details later.
It was the size of a catbird.
I see. Right. Well, I'm going to go with immature, cedar waxwing.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
They would do that. They're brown, they have stripes, and they have a nice pattern of gold on their tail, a stripe that goes across the tail. And he's probably just a fledgling and not yet capable of flying,
Maybe not injured then?
Oh, maybe not injured. More likely not injured. He hasn't earned his wings yet, and a few days he'll be ready to go. There is also the possibility that he is injured and may have flown into a glass window. And so we have to take that into consideration. Eyes on it will help, maybe.
Yeah.
But the chances are parents are there nearby and will take charge.
Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's birding. 800-348-2551 is the number. Julie Hart has the month off. We'll see her next month. Okay, we're going to give Rich a chance to catch his breath from the parking fiasco. And we'll be back and check the email and then go to the phones in a moment. Fox Pop on WAMC. It's Ray Graff with you. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Avian Expert Deluxe. The number here is 800-348-2551. And we'll go to the phones in just one second. One more email from the first part of the show. This is from Joan. Woodpecker at Hummingbird Feeder. This year, we have a new visitor at the Hummingbird Feeder. The hummingbirds are not happy about it. Usually, the hummingbirds fly off until yesterday decided they stay. They both tend to feed about the same times. Early morning and late afternoon, is it unusual for downy woodpeckers? It's been fun to watch with the interactions.
Ready?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, we could take
Ready?
Some.
Yes.
We could do the NPR pause, which is about 3 seconds.
We're good to go.
Go.
Yes, it is unusual, but no, it does happen. I don't know where the no part fits in there, but downy woodpeckers have discovered hummingbird feeders. One at a time, and eventually they all seem to catch on. And no, the hummingbirds are not happy about it. The downy woodpeckers, they become habituates and addicted to the
hummingbird.
Easier,
huh?
It's very easy for them. They have that long tongue that you can probe down into the nectar bowl.
Yeah.
And wow, is that ever good for them.
So you're okay with this?
Well, you got to take it as it is. I would suggest putting another hummingbird feeder someplace around where the hummingbirds will get a fair chance. Now, it happens with myself and my neighbor. My neighbor's hummingbird feeder has a resident downy woodpecker. I have the hummingbirds. Thank you very much, neighbor.
You know, we have a lot of bee balm and mm-hmm. beautiful flowers, and we've had a lot of hummingbirds this year.
Good job.
They're not the friendliest. They're kind of tough, those birds, aren't they?
Well, they are tough, that's for sure. I suppose they're friendly if their only choice is your feeder, which is, by the way, a suitable substitute. But I always prefer the wildflowers like you have there. I don't have them, at least not ready yet. And they come to my feeder. And by that, they are very friendly.
Now, they are or they are not attracted to the color red?
They are, very
they
much
are.
So.
But yet you don't want to put the red stuff in the feeder.
No, there's no need to do that. The red feeder body itself will do the trick. And there's no need to add artificial coloring to their diet.
Interesting. You know, the reason I ask, I was out taking the air with the wife maybe last weekend, and there were a lot of hummingbirds around. And one pretty much dive bombed me, but I was wearing a red T-shirt.
Yes, that's it.
And it's so crazy. And then it backed right off once it realized I'm not a flower.
Well, if you put a red plastic, red flower, or paper mache flower in your hat band, they will come to your hat.
Do you know, people do that just for that reason.
They like my red suspenders.
Do they really?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, all right, let's just go to the phones then. Oh, it's Merle in Argyle. Hi, Merle. You're on. You know, Merle.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Well,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. You know, when Rich almost didn't show up and you were on hold, I thought, okay, it's going to be the Merle from Argyle show for the whole hour.
I volunteered to fill the hour.
What's up, man? What do you want to know?
All right, I got a lot of things.
Okay.
One, just a quick hummingbird. If you feed them with a feeder and take the feeder down or it runs out of juice, Rich can back me up. They will get right in your face and say, put some food in the feeder.
Will they really?
And, yeah, they do.
Yeah. All right. This had to go back 3 or 4 years ago, and I called in and made a sighting, and I just had it confirmed within the last week. This had to do with golden eagles hunting and feeding on whatever the farmer had cut up in the field, because the farmer was out there mowing the grass. And two golden eagles were on the ground fighting over whatever they ran over, snake, mole, bowl, whatever. And I saw them on the ground, and they were up and down because they were fighting over some of the food. But I wasn't close enough. I was over 150 yards away. And I've been trying to confirm with the guy out mowing, and I called him a couple of times, but he wouldn't call back. And then I met him just a week ago, and he said right off the bat, golden eagle. So it is confirmed. There was the two of us saw him, and we are about 8 miles from the Hudson River. This time of year is when he mows. So is it this time of year when they migrate?
Okay.
Or,
that's a question.
That's a question.
I got one more about a turn.
Okay, well, let's go with this one first, Merle. Okay.
Otherwise, it is going to be the entire Merle hour after all. All right, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, assuming that the identification is correct, and I say that with sincerity because they're probably bald eagles. You are close to the Hudson River. Golden eagles are not here during the summertime, and they are here during the winter. And bald eagles will find stuff in the field. In fact, let me round it up. In fact, now's a good time. Unfortunately, the haying time is a smorgasbord for turkey vultures, crows, ravens, eagles, hawks, and owls. And so they're all out there at their various times, picking and gleaning over the leftovers and left-unders that the mowers took care of. They served it up, and they're ready to eat. So the bald eagle, young ones, as you know, Merle, I'm sure, the young ones look very much like the golden eagle. There are some discrete differences, and ain't golden eagles, Merle, I hate to tell you, but unless you get a picture.
Now, I mean, Merle, I'll give you 30 seconds to rebut his verbally slapping you down on this. Merle, what do you think?
With love.
I'm going to say red birds that you take in an Audubon course, and he said it first. I said two golden big birds in the field, and he said golden eagle.
But Merle.
And it was around this time of year, and there were two of them.
Dude,
it wasn't a young bald eagle.
You were 450 feet away, Merle. I mean, you're further away than Zapruder
was. But he was mowing. He was 20 feet away.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Final word, Rich.
All right. So I'm going to say there were golden eagles. You can say whatever you want.
Merle, I can't say anything. I did not see them, so I have to defer to your good judgment.
Can you imagine, Merle, if we had a full hour of this when Rich Guthrie... if he didn't show up, how great that would be?
All right, real quick.
All right, buddy.
Not turn. K-N-O-T.
Yes.
I think that's what I saw. And it was in what is normally a dry cultivated for field hockey in the wintertime, and the soil is all nothing but sand, so the water never stays there. But with all the water rain we had, this pond, this indention in the ground, which is not big, it's 20 by 30 feet, had about 6 inches of water in it. There were dragonflies flying around.
All right.
And this tern would sit on the bank, get up, and fly around in a couple circles over the pond, and then sit back on the bank, and then do the same thing again. Its size is about the size of maybe a dove, robin to dove, short leg, black bill, light brown all the way, no color, except for a little white at the hump. And the only thing I came up with looking through the book was a not turn.
Okay, so let's...
K-N-O-T, turn.
All right, the show's almost over, so I'd like to get a few more calls in. What do you think, Rich?
I don't know. I'll get off.
All right, buddy.
Okay, Merle, well, no, not yet. Sorry, Ray. I never heard of a not turn. So I don't know what you found.
You want me to... get the book.
Oh, gosh, no.
Put me on hold.
No.
And then.
All right. Well,
and I'll get the book.
Nick, I'll tell you what. There is a knotty, N O T T Y, which is a type of tern.
Okay. That's it then.
Yeah.
Except that it's found only and very rarely in the tropics. They rarely ever come to the continental United States.
But do
except
they ever?
Yes, they do. After hurricanes. Or deep storms like we just had pass through. So it's possible, Merle.
Yeah.
But right. We're going to need a photo because it's so rare.
Okay.
Yeah, here we go.
He's a skeptic, Merle.
You know, I don't know if it's really rare when I see a strange bird, so I didn't take a picture.
You got to do it, man.
And I'm I had other things going on at the time.
Well, listen, great call, and thank you for being with us, and thank you for, listen, I would have leaned on you even more if Rich didn't show up.
But Rich showed up.
Yeah,
all right,
man.
I'll let you talk to all the people.
All okay. right, Merle, thanks Bye. A lot. Bye. Appreciate it.
Ray, thank you for that.
Merle from Argyle. I mean,
Merle, thank you for that, too.
Is one of the greats. 800-348-2551 is our number. Now, let's see how we can follow that one up.
Mm-hmm.
Tim in Montgomery, Massachusetts, how you doing?
Tim?
Hi, Ray, how you doing?
Good. Welcome.
Hey, listen, so I just had a problem with a barred owl. It's kind of been moving in closer to my house. The other night I went out after midnight to get something out of my car, and the owl came flying right at me. Thought it was going to attack me. And then it just like moved 5 feet away and just sat there in the yard. Didn't move. I locked myself in the car, had to get enough courage to get out of the car. I didn't want to deal with that in the middle of the night. But and then the other the next night, it was in the yard and just kind of sat on the ground for a while. And then it would fly back up into the tree. I just wondered if there's anything to do to sort of keep them away from the house more.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, probably I'm going to suggest that it.
I don't want to encounter him in the middle of the night again.
Yes, right. Well, don't forget that thing in the car next time. But then what you can do is it's probably a young owl that's in the yard, and Mama Pop is out there trying to stand guard over it, protect it, and you were a potential threat. The one on the ground may have been the young one. They will walk around on the ground, letting Mom and Pop come and feed it. After a while, like you say, it can fly up into a tree, and he'll probably may find another soft spot to spend the night, and your problem will be solved. In the meantime, it will be there. It's a young owl, a young barred owl. They won't pose a significant threat to you. They may brush by you, but I've never heard of a case where they will crease your scalp or do anything
Yikes.
Mean and nasty like that.
Are there
like
some
that.
Birds that'll crease your scalp?
Oh, there are.
Yeah, I don't want to know them.
No.
Well, fortunately, they're not really around here so much, but the American goshawk, as we call it now, which is a powerful hawk, bird of prey, and the peregrine falcon, both of those are very aggressive when it comes to their babies. The barred owl, not quite so much. He'll talk a lot. He'll yell a lot. He'll stand its ground a lot. But you'll be all right. You can, maybe put a hat on, and then your problem will be solved.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good to know. The other thing was I was observing him the next night because I saw him again. And I was in the house, though, this time. There was a cat out there, and it was like they were playing with each other.
I doubt
the
it.
The cat was like rolling over on its back, and the owl would kind of walk over and bump it.
Really?
And then the cat would roll over again. But they didn't fight, or they didn't, get into any sort of scuffle.
Have you been spending time with Merle?
Yeah. So I've seen situations like this.
I might be. But, I thought it was an episode of The Owl and the Pussycat.
Oh, that's so cool.
A good one. Yeah. But I've seen incidences like this, and I have a hard time accepting it, but you saw it, and I believe it, where wild animals and cats tend to sometimes get along.
That is amazing.
It's kind of like a iffy thing for the poor cat, because sometimes it may want to play and the other one may want to eat.
Yeah.
And so, but a cat is a little large for an owl, a barred owl, to pick up. So you ought to be, the cat ought to be okay. It's just at a little brazen and risky business on its part.
Wow, Tim, that's a great one. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Two very odd sightings in two different calls here to begin the show.
Off to a good start here.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Let's go to Northampton, Massachusetts. Jackie, you're on. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi, Ray.
Hi,
Rich. I hope that last call isn't going to encourage people to keep their cats out all night, because there are plenty of other creatures out there that would love to eat them.
You know,
anyway,
Jackie,
I'm
100%. Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm calling because we have had the great good fortune and excitement to see sandhill cranes here in Western Mass. We've been going out of our way. We know where to find them. You know, you go like 20 times and you might see them 2 or 3 times. We've seen the chicks. We've seen them flying. I'd be interested in your take on it, Rich. I know some stuff, but I'd love to hear you talk about it. Particularly, I'm wondering, you know, why are they here? And there's a small population. They started, I guess, arriving here maybe 5 years ago. But if they're just mating here, isn't that too small of a pool to have a successful population and become established? Do you think a population will become established, or is this some sort of just anomaly? Can you speak to that?
Well, both of those. It is an anomaly, but it has some good backing and a history of progression. The sandhill crane is one of my favorite birds. It's a beautiful bird, a stand-up bird. They have a posture about them that is very aristocratic and very noble-looking, and they are quite tolerant of people. Down in Florida, they'll walk up onto your lawn and walk right across your driveway as you're walking out the door.
Really?
Yeah, they're quite numerous down there, and again, quite tolerant. Now, up here in the Northeast, they're a newcomer here. Not many years ago, in my style, they were not here at all. But then they started nesting in the Montezuma area of Western New York, the wildlife refuge out there. And then they showed up in Vermont and Massachusetts and actually started nesting there. So they are definitely expanding their range eastward. And I predict that the growth chart will continue in that pattern. There will be more of them. They'll adapt to more suitable environments that they find as the population grows. And welcome to the neighborhood.
So they're here because of climate change, because of overpopulation somewhere else?
I can't say whether that's the factor or not. But it did happen, and it's incontrovertible that we have a expanding population of sandhill cranes. And again, I love that pattern.
Okay. Well, Jackie, thank you very much for the call. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Birding with Rich Guthrie. Julie Hart has the month off, and we'll be back. Check the email bag and go back to the phones after this. Say, have you downloaded the new version of the WAMC app yet? It is fantastic. I don't like to rave about apps and this and that. It's beyond me at this point. But this one has functionality. It's fun. You'll find the stuff you like. Now, if you have an Android, it already updated from our old app. But if you have an Apple, an iPhone, whatever that is, right? You want to go download the new one. It's free. And then install it and get rid of the old one. And then you'll have all these great new features. WAMC app, worth it. Very nice. It's free, so it's definitely worth it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birding today. And, Rich, you wanted to mention something about travel.
Yes, indeed, Ray. Our travel, WAMC's travel advisor, frequently here on Vox Pop, and I are talking about a birding trip to Costa Rica next year.
You're kidding me.
And I'm saying right now,
Gene Gagnon?
Yes, stay tuned. It's coming up.
Holy mackerel. All right. You guys get along?
Absolutely. We talk similar language.
Really?
Birds, happiness, and getting out there.
I had no idea Gene liked birds.
We do now.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, she'll be on next week, so I will certainly, or maybe the week after, I'll pester her about this for you.
Yes.
All right, the email bag couple, and then we'll go back to the phones. Stephanie in Massachusetts writes, my sister in Colorado has lately had a problem with her hummingbird feeders. She tells me that there are lots of yellow jackets around them all the time. It seems like this is a problem for the hummingbirds. Any advice?
Lots of what? I'm sorry, I missed that word.
Good heavens. All right, I'll try it again. It's very short. All right, we'll go slowly. My sister in Colorado has lately had a problem with her hummingbird feeders. She tells me that there are lots of yellow jackets around them all
yellow
the time.
Yellow jackets. Okay.
It sounds like it's a problem for the hummingbirds. Any advice? And that's from Stephanie in Massachusetts.
My experience with that is yellow jackets and hummingbirds in my yard, the hummingbirds brush aside the yellow jackets. So so they get to the feeder. They kind of like bully their way in. And the yellow jackets will yield. So I think that may be their way of handling the situation. I don't know how the Colorado hummingbirds react to yellow jackets in that area. But I do know around here that they will go. There are hummingbird feeders that have yellow jacket guards on them.
Really? What do they look like?
Well, it's only a little extension around the portal, the ports, that the nectar ports. And it prevents the yellow jacket from getting close enough to feed on the sugar water. The hummingbirds with their long tongue can reach through.
Around the bee balm and some of the beautiful flowers in our garden, I will see the bees and the hummingbirds sort of coexisting. Everybody gets a taste.
Yes, and that's the situation that I'm watching as well. But again, I don't know how the hummingbird species in Colorado react to that. I don't know if they're up to it or their aggressiveness. They're more tolerant of one another. There's a very different social behavior amongst them. But
it's the same birds, right?
No, different species.
Okay, and what do they have in Colorado?
It is the broad-billed hummingbird.
Okay.
Or the broad tail. There's two broads out there. One is the bill and one is the tail, so I don't know.
Two broads out there. You know, let's leave it alone. Mike in Rexford writes, what is a good way to keep birds from flying into my sliding glass doors? I've heard of stickers, decals, but this is a whole sliding glass door. What do you recommend?
Go to American Bird Conservancy online and look at their recommendations. They have a deterrent method of keeping glass and birds apart. It's intensive, but it's worth it. You really don't want to lose that beautiful songbird that flew up from the tropics because they flew into your glass window.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's 800-348-2551. We'll go to Cheshire, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
My question is, I was driving through Upper Worthington about a week ago, and in a freshly cut hay field, I saw five birds that looked like a family, and they were taller than great blue herrings, and the color of them were like brownish to gold.
Good
I've
for you.
I've never seen a bird that big.
You seem to know.
And I was just
right on it. Right on it, Peter.
I don't know what they were, but they were definitely bigger than a great blue herring, and I'll take the answer offline. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
You got it, Peter. These, I strongly suspect they were sandhill cranes. We were just talking about the sandhill crane population in Massachusetts. It's increasing. They're impressive birds. They stand taller than the great blue heron. They have a very upright, aristocratic appearance to them. And they do like open fields. They'll feed on grasshoppers and grain.
All right. Let's go to Schenectady. Aaron, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling in to share a little anecdotal story. You had somebody call in about a barred owl.
Yeah.
I think we saw one in the city about 2 years ago. And living in a city my whole life, over 50, I was teasing my son that he was full of bunks. We go outside, there's a baby owl in the road. We're looking at it, assessing the situation, making sure it's not hurt. I'm looking up animal rescues, and the next thing I know, we assume a mama owl came down and did clip me. I ended up having a scratch from the temple of my eye back to my head.
Wow.
Probably warning me to stay away. And so for us, it was a bigger meaning because my brother had passed away and he loved owls. And so it was an interesting experience and kind of collaborated with your caller before a little while ago.
Wonderful. And sorry to hear about your brother, but it was a wonderful moment for you all to observe and a memory for you to hold.
Yeah. Well, it
certainly was.
Aaron, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate
thank you very much.
Howard's in Western Massachusetts. Howard, go ahead.
Hi. I live in Munson, and every year for many years now, we have had an area that has had about a half dozen great blue herons nesting. This year, we have none. I was wondering if there's anything going on.
I'm wondering as well, and I'm sorry to hear that. Great blue herons, as you mentioned, are sort of colony nesters. They are gregarious in the nesting season. They nest in high, dead, tall trees, a very flimsy nest on the top of these trees. I'm going to suggest that over the winter, a great horned owl may have moved into the nest, and that might have been a significant deterrent. Great horned owls will feast on baby great blue herons as they are fledglings and nestlings before they get large enough, and they are formidable. They will drive their parent off the nest in the night and come back. And so that may have been a deterrent. Other than that, I can't imagine what else might have been. They are very faithful to successful nest sites in the past where they can establish their colony. So there may have been some other environmental factors involved, maybe disturbance of neighboring areas or something to that effect. So I don't have a good answer for you, Howard, but I'm going to stick with the great horned owl possibility.
Howard.
Appreciate the thought.
Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie's our guest today. Birding. Julie Hart will be back with us next month. And let's go to Cape May County, New Jersey, and Rosemary. Rosemary, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi. I'm so glad I was able to get to you. I've had a question I've been kind of holding for a couple of months now, but I live in Cape May County, and in the spring when you sleep with the windows open, I am known to wake up in the night, and I could hear a bird in the distance that I thought to myself, that must be a whippoorwill.
Ooh.
It was, you know. So I got my Merlin app. Here I am at 4 in the morning, and listened to it, and it came up as a Chuck Wills widow.
Even better. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Chuck Wills' widow is the big cousin of the whippoorwill. And like the whippoorwill gets its name from its song, so does a chuck. Instead of saying whippoorwill, it says Chuck Wills' widow, Chuck Wills' widow, Chuck Wills' widow. And they go on and on and on and on and on and on.
They go on and on. And
yes.
I live kind of in a wooded area. It's definitely in the distance. And but, like, I can hear it very clearly and repetitively. Like, you know, it got to the point, like I said, where I would kind of listen at night if, and I could hear it quite often. So
cool.
It was right. I wasn't sure what, because I don't know my whippoorwills or whatever, but it. The couple of times that I did check it, it did say that, Chuck Wills widow. So that's funny.
Well, you do now. And Rosemary, I'm very envious. If
Why?
You had been, if you were in someplace any further north than Cape May County, New Jersey, I would be seriously skeptical.
It
would almost
okay.
impossible task. I'd ask to get a picture, but they're out at night. They're hard to find. And
yes.
But good for you. Like I say, I'm jealous.
Wow.
I appreciate your confirming it. So now I do know. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks
for the
Rosemary.
Call. Have a great rest of your summer. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a birding question or comment for Rich Guthrie. Got about 10 minutes left here. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. What does a whippoorwill look like?
Oh, they're hard to see. They're
well,
almost
somebody
invisible.
Presumably has seen one.
They're the invisible bird.
Really?
They look like a fallen leaf on the ground, and they look like every other fallen leaf on the ground that's in the forest. They,
what? What
they
are you
rest
talking about?
On the ground usually, although they can be on a tree limb if they want to be, but more often they're on the ground, and they just look like ground litter. They're brown and white and black patterned, very camouflaged. And this is why they're very, very seldom. To get a photograph of one is a challenge in itself. To even see one during the day is a challenge.
And Chuck Wills' widow is
and
the other one?
The other one? They're actually both members of the group of bird called goat suckers.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Chupacabras.
Medieval superstition had it that the goat suckers, there are several species in the old world, will come at night and milk the goats dry.
Oh, come on, Rich.
I didn't live there and I didn't invent it, but that's the name that they're stuck because of this superstition. Capri Mugli. Capri is goat and Mugli, I guess, is sucker.
Oh, come on, man. So the superstition is that these birds would come out at the night and milk the goats.
Not my doing. You know, they believed in all kinds of weird things back then. And this one stuck.
All right, so Chuck Wills' widow was named because Chuck Will is dead?
No, just because he says it a lot. And I don't know who Chuck was and nor his widow, but...
And this is a bigger version.
Yes.
And so is he also on the ground?
Also on the ground and also invisible in the same way. There are some other species, you know, our nighthawk, which we used to call the common nighthawk, which is not common at all anymore because they seem to have disappeared. We used to like to, I took the kids into the city to listen to the nighthawks at night.
Yeah.
Into the villages, into Schenectady, into Catskill, into Coxsackie, into Albany. And you could hear them at night. They had a wonderful courtship flight. They would come out of the air. Of course, it's dark. You couldn't see them. But they come plunging down to the ground and almost at ground level, swoop upward again, creating almost a sonic boom. But it wasn't. They're not going at super speed, but they are going with their wings. They create a crashing boom.
Amazing.
And by the way, Albany Pine Barrens Environmental Center during August,
yeah,
you know, check their schedule because a group of the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club members collaborate with the Pine Bush Center to observe the nighthawks in migration during the month of August. So during the middle of the month, come out in the evening, check their schedule, and join them for a free outdoor entertainment watching nighthawks migrate south.
That's very cool. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Rich Guthrie today, and it's birding, and Marion is in West Hurley. Marion, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I want to comment about the owl.
Oh, good.
Attacking people. There was a true crime show years ago, and this woman was found dead in her backyard. And the back of her head had all these scrapes, and she bled to death.
Ah.
But anyway.
Splendid.
They figured out. The guy went in the backyard to see, you know, investigate, and the owl attacked him. I mean, it's one in a million, right?
Wow.
I haven't heard about this.
So if
case.
You look it up on one of those crime shows.
So that was a real story or a fictional story?
A real story. A true crime.
Huh. Go figure.
True crime. Well,
I don't know if that was the exact name of the show, but it was one of those shows.
My goodness.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well,
how long ago?
I know.
Marion, how long ago was this?
That's why I had to call.
How long ago was that, you think, that show was on?
It could be years.
Okay.
Well, it could be like 10 years.
All right.
And where?
On TV.
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't remember that.
TV show, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll look this
yep.
one up, Marion. I'll do a little homework
okay.
before the next one. Thank you for the call.
That is disturbing.
Mary is in Brunswick. Mary, you're on.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I always have wildlife in my backyard. You know, we start with the roaming toms. Next thing you know, we have hens and chicks. And every year we have two or three hens kind of walking together with, you know, a multiple, like three or four babies, each maybe. This year we have two hens every morning, but there is at least 15. They're hard to count. And I'm just wondering, did they adopt each other? Are the hens having more eggs this year that hatch?
Huh.
I mean, they're stomping my zinnias to death, but I don't care.
That's a lot of turkeys.
Why are there so many turkey babies? Yeah, it's a lot of turkeys.
Well, turkeys, as many gallinule species are, they will adopt and cooperate with nearby broods. Parental groups will sort of extended family, a village of turkeys will take care of their young together. So these are all hens, as you mentioned. The males, nowhere to be found. Not now. They're in the way when they can be found. Yes, you're right. And so I'm taking that it's family groups out there.
Okay. Mary, we got a little noise on your signal.
Yes.
So go ahead. Well, thanks for the call. Very quickly to Beth in Hunter, New York. Beth, you're on.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I have barred owls.
Uh-huh.
I had an adult barred owl who spent most of the season during the fall overlooking my little koi pond. Needless to say, I don't have any toads left this year. And it appears as though my mourning dove population has gone down as well as my chipmunk population. Then when we had the smoke last week, appeared two young baby owls on the branch. They were still very downy, but they were making such a sort of a distress call. And I couldn't figure out if they were in distress or if they were just sounding like baby owls. At that point in time, I didn't see any parents around at all.
Only about 30 seconds here, so Rich.
Yeah, let me jump in. I suspect those baby owls were actually screech owls. The barred owls ought to be pretty large now and maybe have shed their downy plumage by now. But the screech owls, the screech owls young are out and about, and they're very tiny. They may look like a baby owl, but by their size. But now's the time for young screech owls to be roaming around.
Go figure. Well, yep. Beth, we're going to have...
Do they just make a terrible sound? They're in distress?
Yeah, it sounds like distress. They sound like they're crying, they're hungry, and they want to be fed. So they need to be somewhat annoying in that respect.
Beth, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. Rich Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Please do, and it's at my name, Richard P. as in Peter. Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, @gmail.com. Welcome.
Well, thank you for coming, and I apologize for the parking problems, but you made it in, and good show, and thanks for being here. We'll see you next month. Support comes from Plaza Travel Center, presenting a small group trip from Albany to Sicily in April, escorted by Gene Gagnon. For trip details, gene@plazatravel.net. Curtis Lumber, offering custom deck design services featuring Trex composite decking, railing and lighting, designer consultations available, curtislumber.com. Maurice D. Hinchy, Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area, celebrating over 250 years of American history, hudsonrivervalley.com to learn more. And Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flower farm, offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes, balletflowers.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Julie Hart will be back with us next month. Thank you for listening, and thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Owen O'Leary screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk UFOs or UAPs with SUNY physicist Dr. Kevin Knuth, and that's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you then.